Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
So before getting here, I was like, man, let me get as much experience with that as possible so that when I'm ready to hit the ground running.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Matt Ambrose, Director of Player Development at Purdue University Fort Wayne. After finishing his playing career at Calvin University, Matt worked his way into the coaching profession and has continued to grow within the Purdue Fort Wayne program. His path reflects the importance of bringing value, building relationships, and finding ways to impact players every day. In this episode, we discuss what he did to break into the industry as a young coach after his playing career, how he looked to add value as a new coach early within his program, and we take a deep dive into player development, including how to build an effective development plan for each player.
Another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Grace today to be able to have an opportunity, a good friend of ours, get to talk with somebody. He is the Director of Player Development over at Purdue Fort Wayne. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Ambrose. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, good to see you, brother.
Yep, you guys as well.
So there's a story that I want to start off with. One, of course, we're diving right into it, right? Yeah. You finish your playing career. When you finished, we'll say you played over at Calvin University, right? You graduate. After you graduate, this was what, 2 or 3 years ago? 3 years ago when the Final Four was in Phoenix. And yep. I remember your dad, we got an opportunity to meet him, and then you were with him. We got an opportunity to meet you. This was, like I said, as soon as you graduated, before you even had your first position. I think this is relevant, so we kind of want to dive into it. We met you at a Rising Coaches event. You were networking, and I got to say, there's one thing that really stood out about you early on was you could tell your father was in the coaching profession because you knew how to go about it, right?
Yep.
But you were going around, you were networking, you were talking to people, different coaches, giving your number out. What did that summer look like for you? What were you doing on a day-to-day basis aside from that event? Obviously, attending events is one piece and a big thing. But what were some of the things that you were doing on a day-to-day basis to position yourself into that first opportunity where you are now?
Yep, absolutely. Like you guys said, I think it started at the Final Four. So the Final Four was just an unbelievable experience to me, going to all those different events, using my leverage of networking with people, reaching out to as many people as I can, just trying to get phone numbers, trying to get emails. Kind of no person is too big, no person is too small, just trying to connect with anyone that I could. And then I think from there, obviously I was fortunate enough to kind of set up some interviews at the Final Four and sit down and kind of have those options open. But obviously with this crazy time in college basketball, so many things are in flux at all times. So I think when after the Final Four, my biggest things that I were doing were just constantly reaching out to people. So constantly sending follow-up texts, follow-up handwritten cards. I sent some handwritten cards out to coaches that I had met, and then they had sent me pictures back of that handwritten card and were like, hey, got your card, here it is. So I think that's something that goes a little bit unnoticed. Just doing things like that is really important. Just simple, coach, it was great to meet you. Let's stay connected. Sometimes they're super busy. They'll get back to you later. But I think that's something that I really prided myself on doing, is afterwards just reconnecting with those people. And then I think on a day-to-day basis was just trying to get advice as much as I could. There can be some days that it's pretty stagnant where you're like, I haven't heard from this coach in a few days. I haven't heard from this coach in a few days, but don't take it personal. All coaches' lives are super busy. They'll get back to you at some point. But also I think that summer after for me, I really dominated just being in the gym with local trainers and all those kind of things and meeting as many players as you could, just because meeting other college players, you never know where that connection is going to come from. So just the trainer that I was working with, just that had trained me for a long time, got in the gym with him, just helped him with workouts any way I could. So it's just staying in the gym. So then when I did finally land that job, some of that stuff is out of my control, that I was more prepared for that job in terms of that.
Yeah, now you hit two line drives, man, like right through left center field there. The first one was following up, right? Like you really three. You invested enough time at the Final Four. The best thing that you said there, and I'm going to say it, and it's going to piss people off, but I don't care, is you didn't logo size up at the Final Four, meaning like you didn't say, I'm going to look at this guy's polo or pullover or half zip and whatever logo's on there, then that makes him cool enough to talk to. But this guy over here, I'm not going to talk to him because I've never heard of that school. I don't know that. You didn't do that. But that's something real in our game. All right. Don't at me about it.
No doubt. But
that's real, people. The second thing is you followed up, right? And you obviously probably had a running list of people as you were going while you were there, and you kept that going. Yep. But then the third thing, and they'll go laugh at this when I say it, but you mentioned handwritten letters. And as old school as you can be, it's like going over a girl's house to ask her dad for that first date. It's that old school.
Yep.
But I'm telling you, we're in such a fast-paced electronic age. And you can fit in easily electronically, but you can stand out authentically with a hand note. And we all have control of that. And think about it, a hand note takes 5 minutes between addressing it.
Not even. Yep.
Writing two sentences, sealing it up, walking down the hallway, throwing it in your athletic department mailbox. So you can do three a day. You can knock them out and do your thing. But like, those three things are awesome, man. Like, you didn't judge and you didn't size up who was cool enough to connect with. And then you followed up, and then you were authentic with the hand notes. Love it.
And I think another thing that, like, my piece of advice too is, like, going with that logo size up, size down, and those handwritten notes, don't be discouraged if you don't hear back too. Because everyone's so busy and doing all those things, like, you didn't do anything wrong if you sent a text or you sent a handwritten note and you didn't hear anything back. It's not anything personal of that coach. Like, they might have gotten it and just might not have shot you a text back. Like, always shoot your shot and do that kind of thing. Like you said, at the Final Four, the convention and stuff, go up to everyone you can, because these coaches might be doing this, coach might be doing that, but that Division II coach, that Division III coach, guess what? They're younger and they're trying to move up. So, like, it's just as important that you meet those kind of people that are your age, that you never know when that connection is gonna. One thing for me is, like, you just want to make as many connections and talk to as many people, because, like, you never know which one's going to get you that next job or which one's going to pop. It can be the guy that you sat down with for 2 hours, or it can be the guy that you decided to, you bumped into on the street for 1 minute and you got his number. Mm-hmm. So it's like, never be discouraged by the person or the logo, or just try to make as many connections as possible and put yourself out there.
Yeah. Great stuff.
That's,
man.
Great. No. And I love how you said that, like, reaching out, sending a text, and don't getting discouraged by it. If you get their number or an email, obviously texts are a little more personal because you have the person's phone number, but like an email or a handwritten note, I used to take that stuff personal. I'll be the first one, because I'm always quick and good with answering my texts, like, immediately. And I hate leaving people on read, because I feel like you deserve a response if you're going to reach out to me. But that's obviously changing and slowly going away, because I'm starting to realize, like, you can't pour your efforts, your time into everybody once you start to get more and more. And especially people at that level, at higher levels, or even just head coaches, they have more than enough emails and texts that come to them. So it took me a little time to fully understand that, but it is 100% true. Now, I want to go back a little bit, because you said when you were in Phoenix, you had a couple interviews. What were those like? What did those consist of? You don't have to go into who they were and all that, but what did those consist of?
Yep, absolutely. So how that consisted was, like, I just did some pre-work before the Final Four. So in terms of trying to leverage different people that I knew that knew this head coach. So obviously I don't know as many head coaches, but with my dad and some former players and just people trying to leverage those connections as much as possible. So kind of was lucky enough to be able to get connected with some assistant coaches that were looking for GAs that could then connected me with the head coach. So honestly, a lot of it goes through assistant coaches. So, like, I was texting some assistant coaches, like, hey, let's meet up. And then it was like, hey, my head coach is going to call you and interview you tomorrow at 10 a.m. So, like, some of that stuff kind of happened. And honestly, those conversations were more just organic. Like, our head coaches are going about doing so much, but just was able to sit down and have a coffee with a few head coaches in the mornings and stuff like that, and just have an informal conversation about my experience and get to know them. And then obviously every process is different, but kind of went from there and was fortunate enough to get interviewed with coaches down there and then visited campus here. And that's kind of how those things worked, which that can be a little bit hard to control and hard to get, but that's, I was fortunate enough to be able to have that opportunity and land myself a job pretty quickly after that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you never know which one, you don't need 9 people to say yes, right? It's exactly. Just that one place to say yes, luckily, which is great. Once you found out with the Purdue Fort Wayne thing and, all right, this is what I'm going to be doing, Did they give you your responsibilities up front, or is that something that kind of played itself out organically after you got there. And I know some descriptions or whatever is included in that.
Yep.
But how did that look as far as?
Great question. I think for me, there's definitely with how we're focused here, it's a very clear staff responsibilities. You got that sheet that's, hey, these are your responsibilities. This is the other person. So I think that's clear. But also at the same time, going into that experience before, I wasn't quite sure, but just talking to other people in the program and other people that were a GA here before meeting with him, the biggest piece that I really focused on was that obviously that director of player development, piece, because my biggest role here is guys want to get extra shots in the gym. I'm working them out. I'm rebounding. I'm doing all those things, playing defense, which is, as a former player, I'm so blessed and I love that, because being in the gym with those guys and doing all that kind of stuff is what I love. So I think I've gotten to learn a little bit of everything in terms of operations, travel, all those kind of things, scouting through my experience. But the main thing that I've really dove in deep into is that director of player development and that working players out. I think I learned that kind of a little bit early through that was going to be one of my main responsibilities. So how I kind of leveraged that, like I referenced before, was working with Jordan Newman, a trainer that I knew from home, and one of his players had played here for a while, just working those dudes out at home and trying to be in the gym as much as possible and picking up different creative ideas to frame those workouts and getting as much experience in the gym with that was kind of how I saw my role here developing. So before getting here, I was like, man, let me get as much experience with that as possible so that when I'm ready, I'm there, I'm ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah, good stuff. Got a built-in workout every day too.
Yep, no doubt. That is true. And I love it.
Good stuff.
If I'm not mistaken, you got my guy Slick over there too, don't you?
Yep, Slick's the man. So Slick actually, it's fun. Slick just took a job at Lamar University. So
I saw that. Yeah.
Slick was awesome though. He was here this year and it was great working with him. And among all the other Coach Kaufman, Coach Wolf, Coach Blaylock, and Coach Sims, they're all great. But Slick was great to have here too and just learn as much as I can from him and all these other great assistant coaches that I've been blessed to be on staff with.
Yeah. Another Rising Coaches podcast alum there.
There you go. I love it.
This guy, I tell you what, Matt has been media trained. And I'd say that in the most complimentary way, because everything he's saying is perfect and it's great. But no, in all seriousness, you could tell what you're doing. Obviously, you're ecstatic about it. I know when we met you years ago, it was definitely something that was a passion. You could tell that you were intrigued by it, and you could obviously see the growth that you've had. You're going into your second season now at Purdue Fort Wayne. This is third season.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Man, I tell you, because Phoenix was 3 years. It goes by so quick. I keep thinking been 2 years.
No doubt.
Yeah, it actually was, because he's been there 2 years.
Yeah, just so finished up my was. Second. Yeah.
So he had in the year three. So still though, that's like light speed.
It goes by too quick.
Time flying.
No doubt.
But so let me ask this. Okay, you go in your first year, taking you back a little bit, your first year going in, that first 30 days or so, obviously it sounds like that the program kind of lays it out as to what your responsibilities are on a day-to-day basis. Your coach is good with that, but maybe some programs that don't. What was your mindset for those first 30 days? This is what I want to tackle.
I think as a mindset, as a GA coming in, you're always thinking like, hey, willing to do everything, which you got to do. And that's all what I was about, was like, man, no task is too small. I'm willing to help in any way I can, whether that's rebounding, whether that's going to drive somewhere, pick up food, all that kind of stuff was implemented. But also I think another main piece that I really focused on was like trying to get to know the staff as well as I could on a personal level. Because I think how I saw it is, hey, as a GA, you have your responsibilities. Also, it's like your job is to help these dudes out as much as you can. They have so much on their plates, those kind of things. So I think one thing that I really focused on was like building a super strong relationship with my other staff members, which that obviously comes with time. So that trust is built over time. That relationship comes over time. But right away, I just wanted to be that guy that was, hey, willing to help in anything and just get to build a strong relationship with those other staff members along with the players. Because when you build that strong relationship, that trust develops. And when that trust is there between all parties, it makes it so much better. So I think one thing that I really honed in on was like just trying to help and assist the staff members and see how they worked every day to implement that and then see where I could implement and take it to that next level or help them with anything that I could. So I think that was one thing that obviously all GAs, which is a great advice, is like no task is too small. Do everything, which you want to get your hands on everything because all that stuff is super valuable. So along with that, I think just building relationships with the staff members and then also the players was super important for me. And like in my experience here, I hit the ground running right away. Right when I got here, team camp started 2 days later. And then kids camp was a week later. So like you're thrown into the fire right away. So you're going to learn a little bit by just making mistakes and being thrown in the fire. But I think for me, that relationship piece with connecting with staff members and seeing how I can help them out and best provide value is where I really focused on in my first 30 days.
Yeah, said, man. And it's not, you went first with that stuff, right? Like you're coming in and it's not, it's nice if they jump in first and they kind of pull you into things, but it's obviously better if you go first and you jump into yourself, because the number one thing that they probably didn't say this, and very few staff say it out loud, but the number one thing they want to know is this guy here with the right mentality and the right heart, and is he going to be available?
No doubt.
They don't say that out loud.
No doubt.
No, they'll never say it.
You don't hear it in interviews.
Yeah,
it's not something. But that is the you want to talk about elephant in the room. That is Jumbo or Dumbo or whatever the hell the giant elephant was named back in the day. But that's the that's the elephant in the room.
Yep.
Is this guy going to be available? Is he an everyday guy?
Yep.
And
I think
and
that
they got, and once they know, then you're good. But like you've got to there's a period in there where you're under the microscope in a healthy way. Right. But and then once they know, then you're good.
I think that term that honestly that you said there that just clicks immediately is that everyday guy. We use that word in our program all the time. Players, coaches, you got to be someone that people can rely upon and you got to be consistent. And like, obviously, when you first get there, it's hard because you got to earn that reputation. But that's a day by day process of being an everyday guy, busting your butt every single day, giving it your all, willing to do anything. So I think that word of being an everyday guy is so applicable to players. Like players got to be an everyday guy, but also just as applicable to coaches. Like coaches need to be an everyday guy, which most coaches are, and everyone, it's been a great experience. So I think just proving that as you walk in the door, like you're an everyday guy, you're available, you're willing to bust your ass, all those things are super important and very valuable.
That's the one thing that, and well, I guess Alan has told me this before, but then the coaches that I've worked for as well have said this. There's two people that have to show up on a day-to-day basis, and it's the head coach and it's your point guard. And if you don't have those two on a good basis, okay, the assistant can have a bad day, but they can go under the radar. Your shooting guard can have a bad day, but he can go under the radar because the point guard has the ball in his hand. So if your head coach doesn't show up or he has a bad day, it's probably going to be a bad practice. Or if the point guard's having a bad day, those other four people aren't getting the ball as much as they should because he's turning it over. So it's those two people. And then on the flip side of that, obviously the assistants have to try and stay as consistent as possible to keep the head coach aligned and on top of things too. So
yeah, and I'm not that smart. That was Kelvin Sampson, by the way, who said that. I just hijacked it. But yeah, that's exactly what he said. Your head coach and your point guard cannot have bad days. Those are the two people in the entire program.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt. So let's fast forward a little bit where you're at. Player development, what does a typical development day or a plan look like? So where do you even start when you make a plan?
Absolutely. So I think two kind of part question there. I think a typical day for me is every place is different with when they're practicing. So just get in the morning, watch some film, watch mostly our guys, some other team stuff. And before practice this past year, we practiced in the morning. So I always have that hour slot before practice to get up shots with guys extra. So like before they got weights and those kind of things. And we had another GA as well helping with that. So it was really great. It's like a lot of our guys would want to get up shots before practice, and that gym rat mentality where it's like, hey, let me get up extra shots before practice. Then we'll have weights and go through practice and then film and obviously all that kind of stuff that is known. And then at the end of the day afterwards is like watching more film, watching guys' shots, watching, doing different tasks like that. And then at night, like a lot of guys are coming back at night to get up shots. So like working guys out as much as I can, morning, night, and obviously having a second GA really helps. But doing that is just being available as you can. Like we talked about, like always being available for the players, always being there. And then I think in terms of the development plan for me, like some of it's like with a lot of our guys that have been here. So I'll create a development plan for them before they get here in the summer. So if they're interested in wanting to get some workouts in, like last summer for a recruit or a player that was on the team, he's like, man, I want to tell me what to do to work out before I get there. So I sent him 2 or 3 weeks when they're home for the summer of, hey, these are the workouts you should be doing. Like, this is the type of stuff. If you have this amount of rebounders, all those kind of things. So just building that with those guys. And then obviously I think the development plans differ obviously in season and out of season. So like, I do a lot of stuff in season of watching that film and seeing, hey, this is where he's going to get his shots. This is where, not as much obsessed with, hey, he missed that left corner three, so let's go shoot the left corner three 10 times the next morning, because that's obviously very stressful in the mind, but just trying to be, you put them in positions that they're going to be in the game. So instead of being exact, but trying to put them in the best positions that they're going to be in the game. And then in terms of out of season, I tend to be a lot more creative with the workout. So in terms of different footwork, different putting them in different situations, do a lot of stuff like that out of season that kind of helps expand their game and elevate their game. And obviously you still want to do that during the season, but during the season with as much practice and film and travel we're doing, it's always good to keep it, especially as the season goes on, keep it light on their bodies and just get up a lot of mental reps, a lot of shots is how I go about that.
No, you got a great approach, man. You just described what's cool about player development, right? Because it's got a lot of different angles to it. It's got a long-term angle in terms of like, you're talking in recruiting, like this is who we see you now and this is who we think you could be. And then you obviously have the preseason and heading into the season stuff. Then you have the system angle where they're getting shots out of the system. So that's another angle of player development. Yeah. Then you got their individual like stuff that, you know, and that's typically off season where you're trying to add one or two things.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have just the light mental side where it's, you know what, it's February. Let's be smart, but let's still get it in and do this right here. But you and your dad probably would agree with this. It may have cheat coded you with it, but I think the best player development stuff is when it's collaborative.
100%.
Because now it's you and the player, and it's now a partnership, and you're working with each other as opposed to it's always you talking, you finger wagging, don't do this, do that. When it's collaborative, that's when it's really fun.
Absolutely. No, I'm glad you touched on that point, because that's a point that's super, super important. Something that I do a lot with our players is I can watch and see them playing out there, but they're the one playing and they're the one that can feel different things, feel different shots, how they're feeling. So like getting that feedback from those players is super, super important. So like listening to where they think, where their shots are coming from, where they, where, how their body's feeling, doing all those kind of things is super important, because if you're not on the same page with that player, like, it's not going to, you're not going to be in a great spot. So I think listening to them and getting their feedback as much as to what they're feeling and what they're seeing is super important. And that goes with, I'm sure, which we'll get into a little bit, but in terms of watching film with them and stuff like that, and you got team film, but then watching that individual film. And so obviously that's super important, because you can see different reads and different things that they're seeing. And it's super important to get that feedback, because if it's not going both ways, like, it's not going to be even close to as valuable as it should be.
Yeah, so true, man. So true.
And you touched on it already too, like the film aspect. And my mind started running a little bit. So like, for instance, you have a player who is predominantly a three-point shooter, we'll say. I'm just going to make up a hypothetical situation. You have a player who is predominantly a three-point shooter. You notice that he catches a lot of his plays, actions, or just shots off of the right and left wings, or maybe the two where he gets them the most, okay? Off of watching film, that, okay, these are the two spots where he gets maybe each spot is like 20 to 30% of his shots, and then the other, we'll say 40% is like maybe attacking the rim, mid pull-ups, corner threes, top of the key. So you, it sounds like you focus heavily on, okay, he gets most of his shots on the, on these wings. Let's prioritize these. But then obviously off season, you want to trickle in the other spots. But then on the wings, maybe you'll have him do catch and shoot five in a row, catch and rip through, go to the left hand, go to the right hand, attack the rim, different finishes at the rim. Can you break that down a little bit, how you use that film to really work on it?
Absolutely. I think the way I use that film is like not being too specific with it, because I think that's where you can, it can be a little dangerous of looking at, hey, he shot five on the left wing today, so we're going to just shoot all left wing threes in the workout. I think that can trick their minds a little bit. So like almost working it in a way in the workout where it's like, hey, we're going to do some of that at the start, and then we'll mix in some other stuff, and then we'll do that more at the end, where it's like, hey, you might do that slightly more, but also not being too mental with it, where it's like, hey, I missed that left wing three, so now I got, I missed that left wing short, so then tomorrow morning I'm going to get in the gym and shoot that left wing three 100 times. Like that, the players' minds are everywhere and have so many other things to worry about. I think that's, that becomes a little demonstrative to them. So I feel like for me, in terms of watching the film, watching films with players and getting their feedback, but in terms of like where exactly they're getting their shots from, I feel like I do that more in terms of keeping in my own mind. Okay, so they're not as much as mental about it. But definitely, like you said, like there are certain guys that I can think of. It's, hey, he shoots a, like, in terms of player development and then the season, it's like we had a kid this year who shot almost all of his shots were from three. And like, he was never going to rip a closeout. He was never going to attack. So like, in the season, we're not working on ripping to the basket and attacking, just the way his game is and in his player development piece. It's like, that was never going to be his game kind of thing. So like, working on different footwork, but he was a 40% 3-point shooter and started every game and really good. So it's like working on things that different actions and different stuff that he's going to get his threes on, but trying to be super, super broad with it. Cause if you have one play, it's like, I don't want to run, give him 50 shots of that one play. So then when we run that in the game, it's, oh, I'm thinking about how I shot this a million times. So just reinforcing different, more different movement patterns, I would say, in terms of the shots rather than exact actions or plays where it's like, he's going to get a shot right at that spot at this time of the game.
No, I love that, man. But you just made me think of something. And again, this is going to sound as old school as the hand note and the going to the daughter's house to ask the dad for the date. But talk about the importance of shot faking, because I think now, I don't know how many individual skills trainers mix that in to the point of not just, they may talk about shot faking, but they don't talk about the value of shot faking.
Yep.
And shot faking is another way, if it's done in the right flow, and it's a great way for a non-driver to get some space and find a way to get two people on the ball, which ultimately starts the dominoes, right?
Yep.
And but I don't think that it's like an undercoached and undertaught thing, I think. And I wish we had your dad on here, because he's probably, we could do an hour probably deal on shot faking.
Yeah,
knowing him. But yep. I'm sure no you doubt. Heard that. I'm sure you heard that from him, either obviously playing for him and growing up, the importance of shot faking. And that dude in New York obviously is really good at shot faking.
Good at it. Absolutely. So,
but just talk about that and the value of shot faking in terms of mixing that in with player development. And it's another way to get space.
Yep, no doubt. I think you hit it right on the head, is like, it's an art. So like, shot faking is very difficult, because as we've seen in the NBA and across different things, it's like, you got some guys that'll go quick shot fake and it works. Then you got some guys that do this long shot fake and it works.
So yeah, like, I think the eye,
exactly. Yeah. The eyes are super important with that. Like, it's got to be believable. Like, I think the eyes and the tempo of it a lot have got to be consistent. So like, you'll see some guys that'll go super quick and shot fake and go, and it's, man, that's not going to do anything for you. So I think one way that I implement that in my workouts is like adding different decision-making techniques and processes. So like, how I'll do it is, I'm fortunate enough, obviously playing recently, like one thing I love to do is play defense in workouts. So it's, if you play defense and give them that live look, it's a lot easier to implement it. But without the defense, I think I do a lot of different like cues. So like, for example, I'll say, you'll come off you'll lift from the corner and you'll catch it. And as you're catching, I'll say 1, 2, or 3. And it's like, 1 is shot, 2 is shot fake, rip left, 3 is just rip middle. And so one thing that I really stress about that, and that's like implementing it, but also it's hard without a defense. So I think the best is with a defense to be able to give them those live reps.
No,
but in terms of the decision-making thing with that, with those different cues, one thing that I stress immensely to them is, hey, just make a decisive decision. If you make a decisive decision, especially with no defense, there's no wrong decision. So like, we got certain guys where it's like, hey, if you come off that thing and you feel like you're open in a game, like, I don't want you pre-planning that decision. Like, a lot of players struggle with sometimes, hey, as I come up here, I'm going to pre-plan and think I'm going to do this. It's, hey, and so sometimes I'll even throw in there, I won't say anything. I'll pass and I won't say anything. So it's, if you've paused for a second, that's when it doesn't count.
Right.
If you go with it decisively and rip left, but I said one, which is shot, like, that's fine. Like, I'm fine with that. It's just got to be decisive. It's got to be there. So I do different things like that with different cues, 1, 2, 3, then also like, working these guys out all the time, I'll switch it up and be like, all right, now we're doing X, Y, Z. So like, it just makes the guys think. And then you can sometimes implement a first decision, then afterwards, a quick change of direction decision. So it's like, you try to get their minds going, because in the games, the minds are going to be going. You got those defenses. But one thing I really want to stress with them is like, hey, there's no wrong decision. Like, I need you to be decisive. I need you to be that. We're not going to sit here and be like, be super decisive, catch the ball and just hold it. Like, then it's start over. That doesn't count no matter what happens. But if you're decisive with it, but also like, also don't want you to cheat the drill where it's, if you're decisive, you're just going to get it wrong every time, and still try to get that cue right. But also, if you're not getting it right a few times, like, that's fine. Just be decisive with it.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. I love it. Yeah, it's good. And it's got to be a real fake. Can't be a fake.
Yeah.
You guys have probably seen the video of Kobe when he was up on a stage and he was talking about, like, when people throw a pump fake, they'll always have their one back leg and they'll bring their back leg back. And that's evident. If you're looking down at their legs, you can see the back leg goes back. Nobody shoots off of one leg. I shouldn't say that. Maybe shouldn't say that anymore. I saw Peyton Pritchard do it the other day for a game. That was a game winner. So I guess that is relevant.
Yeah,
now,
late, but... late clock. He's a,
But
typically.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And the shot fake, everybody varies. So it's definitely, it's cool. It's interesting to really hear about the breakdowns.
First thing you said, to close that, the first thing you said was great, is about the eyes. And Jamal Crawford, if you listen to him on NBC all the time, he says it all the time. Eyes tell lies. Eyes
couldn't be more true.
Eyes tell lies. So
couldn't be more true.
That's a big thing with the shot fake.
And I think just touching on the shot fake, one more thing. One thing that I think is a little bit a lost art sometimes is like the secondary shot fake. Like you rip and you drive, and then when you get there, then you shot fake. And like you see that stuff all the time in the NBA because they're getting D-way. And they're trying to throw it up. And so all that stuff, there's an art of that foul drawing stuff, but not as much that. But it's like these dudes want to block shots. Like everyone's trying to go block a shot. So like you driving under control and using that secondary shot fake. Like my biggest thing to players with that too is, hey, that guy doesn't buy it, kick it out. Like it's all right. Like it's not, hey, I secondary shot fake and I got to throw it up. Like a lot of times that 7-footer is going to buy it. But if he doesn't buy it, hey, just kick it out. You got someone moving, spacing, and all those kind of things, which all offenses are different. But I think that's one thing that's super lost too is like, everyone thinks about this first shot fake, but also if you drive under control and you get there and then you shot fake, that's almost just as powerful.
Yeah. No.
If not more.
Great point. Yep. Love it.
That is a great point. That's one thing I got to say. And that kind of relies on undisciplined bigs. Nothing grinds my gears more than you are 6'10", 7 foot. You got some smaller guy coming at you. Now, trust me, this is coming from a big. I understand. I always want to jump up, and everybody gets the oohs and the ahs when you send that crap up in the row S of the rafters.
Yeah.
But then later on in my career, I started realizing, why am I jumping for all of this? It's 10 times harder. And my coaches would always tell me, you're 6'8". Just jump up, put your hands up. With your hands all the way up, you're like 7 foot something. And so much harder to make a shot rather than drawing a foul.
No, exactly. No doubt. That art of just walling up, and as you're a big, like walling up, and obviously you can jump sometimes, but keeping that verticality is super, super important.
So Matt, what is, if you had to say, this is my favorite thing to work on? Obviously it's probably player dependent. What's the number one thing you like to work on?
Favorite thing to work on?
Obviously, maybe favorite drill.
Favorite drill. Obviously I love the ones in terms of finishing. I do a lot of stuff near the rim or starting at the elbows. So like able to give them contact and all of that stuff and then explode after that contact. So I do a lot of stuff with that. Then I'll do a lot of stuff. Obviously it's very player dependent, but I love working on like full speed movements. So like in terms of just straight catch and shoot is fine, but in terms of coming off different ball screens, being physical with them, doing all those kind of things, I love that stuff. But then I love running full speed and kind of catching inside foot and using our terms with that kind of stuff. I love that kind of stuff. So like, I would say the physicality finishing wise, I love that just because I think that's so important for a lot of guys. And there's also a good way of doing that with also saving their bodies during the season. So I think I'm really effective with doing that. And then in terms of, obviously every workout's different. So you're going to work out your bigs and do a lot more touch work around the rim, but then you're going to work out point guards who are going to come off more ball screens and do all those kind of stuff. So there's different creativity things that you have to implement in all those things. So I think there's different aspects that I like of all of it, but I would probably say as the shooter and as someone that was coming, not as much like inside foot running, but just running off covers, off back actions, ball screens, ripping and attacking. A lot of those decision-making stuff is something that I love just because it grinds the player's gears a little bit and takes them a while to get fully used to, but I can see the value of it right away for those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that resembles putting them in the game, right?
Yeah.
That's usually like the underlying deal is if it puts them in the game and it makes them see the game before the game and feel the game before it's game time, then that's the stuff that's really fun, man. And the challenge is the challenge daily of waking up and trying to figure it out. Okay, what pins are we knocking down today?
Exactly.
You know, because player development's a journey.
Yes,
I think that's what I hope people pull from this pod today. Is like it's not a one time thing. You can't be occasional with it. No. That is a long-term journey, and you're all in from if they're there for a year or 4 years. That thing is a journey, man.
it is consistent. You got to be consistent with it. And I think you touched on it earlier, is like, there's that piece of selling a guy on a recruiting visit and all those kind of things on our team's vision for them. And that's super important, but also like working on that vision every day, in different ways. There's so many different ways of player development with, you got the workouts, you got the diet, you got the protein that they got to take in, you got the weightlifting, so there's so many things that involve into that player development that are so well-rounded rather than just workouts on the court. That's important. But like all those other things in your daily life and all those things got to align directly with it. Cause if they don't, you're doing a disservice to yourself.
Yeah. And they remember what you said in the first place.
Exactly.
Whatever you said on that visit,
you better hold true.
They're not going to bring it, they're not going to say it again. They're not going to bring it up, but they're tracking that. From the day they get to campus, they're tracking it.
Well, and let's be honest, and all three of us, I know we're all the same type of person in regards to a player does a move that you've been working on and you're never going to sit there and beat your chest, right? It's always one of those, they do it. And then after the game, you get that tingle. I know you guys all understand. You get that tingle. You're like, okay, something we've been working on, we've been trying to implement. He did it in the game. He looks over and then he just gives you like a wink as he's running back after. And it's just,
Great feeling.
It's understood. It's completely understood. And it's like, this is something that we've been progressing for. It's nothing feels better.
No doubt. Yep. No doubt.
No doubt. And when you have that relationship with that player and all those kind of things, it's just makes it even that much more special. Cause it's like, you know, it's them doing it and it's all them. It has nothing to do with you, but it's just like to have that strong relationship with the player and have that connection where it's like, hey, they're wanting to develop with you and do that. It's a great feeling for sure.
Well,
they listened.
It's the best feeling when your confidence in them becomes their confidence in themselves.
Exactly.
Because that's what those moments bring, right? Yep. Like, we've been working on this because it's something that we see you can become, because we're tracking towards this. And then when the game happens and then when what you've been working on and that stuff meets the moment,
No doubt.
You know, like that to me is the best, because like I said, sometimes it's a look, sometimes they point at you, sometimes maybe they say something after the game, but whatever it is, like that's one of the single most rewarding feelings in what we do. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Mage, I know you said you had a question about the NY guys.
Yeah, just one.
Yep.
Absolutely. For those listening and don't know this, but you played high school basketball with Jalen Brunson and know the family well and that type of thing. What is the single biggest thing that makes him tick? Obviously, you know he's coachable. You know he's a winner. He's got a lot of, we can go all day on it. But you know the fabric of what's inside this guy's chest because you're very close. But what is it about that dude that is like, what's his superpower? Put it that way.
Yeah. No, I think he's got 25 superpowers. But I think... in terms of the two things that directly come to my mind and are a little bit like the three things I would say that are a little cliche and a lot of people would say, but like one is work ethic. People say it all the time is, oh, this guy works hard, but like that dude is in the gym all the time, no matter what, all the time working on his game, like hardest worker I know. So that's one thing. That I think the other two things are like, and everyone says they hate to lose, but like for him, it's like, this true hatred of we aren't going to lose. If we lose, I'm not going to be okay. And I think it's cliche that a lot of people say, like for him, it's like how good winning feels, losing is way worse. Like the feeling of hate to lose is way stronger than love to win. So I think for him, that's one thing that like is super, like it's like in anything he does, it's like he's not going to lose. Like it can be a game of pig. It can be a race outside. It can be like a test, like it's just like he's not gonna lose. So like I think that's one thing for him. And then also one thing that was really cool with him is like the relationship piece with his teammates was super like important. To say when you walk in between those lines, like you know it's like the most intense, most hardcore guy where it's like, hey, I'm gonna yell at you, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna push you to your limits. But it's like when you know when you and we might even get into a fight or something like that, but it's like when you step off of those lines, it's like, hey, we're all best friends. It's just like when you're in between those lines, it's different. Like that mind is different. So I think in terms of that, those are the three things that I'm like, I mean, his like unwillingness to lose, just won't lose. And then in terms of that intensity and that work ethic are three things that it's off the charts. And as we're like, it's just like, he's obviously been at Stevenson, then Villanova and second round pick, and then worked his way up. But it's just like, nothing is surprising because it's just like the way he operates and the way he works every day. It's just, you almost are like, there's nothing that that guy can do that's going to surprise you.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Amazing that Dallas had him and Luka on the same team, which is wild. Yeah. as we sit here. But no, I love the fact that you said that everybody wants to win until it's time to sacrifice, right?
Yep.
Until it's time to give up something out of your own boat. Yeah, that's when it changes. But but no, thank you for sharing that, man. Yep. As we record this pod, we're in the middle of the playoffs. Ironically, game three is in Philly tonight.
Yeah.
No, just wanted to touch on that because your dad had shared some things about him at the Final Four that made him special. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. Matt, for you, in regards to you, one, thank you for taking some time. Obviously, I know this is just the beginning of your career. I'm sure, I won't even say I'm sure, I know there's great things moving forward for you. So actually, we're looking forward to being able to see where you go. It was great to meet you years ago and obviously see where you have blossomed so far. You mean a lot to us. You've been around us for the 3 years that we've been running the pod. You were there from the beginning. So
we're grateful
for you. We're grateful for your family. And obviously, if there's ever anything that we could do to help out, but appreciate you for sharing some time here and chopping up today.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you guys. It was great being on here. Obviously, it's a little bittersweet. Obviously, you're being at the Phoenix in the Final Four. Remember hopping on the pod then. So 2 years later, being able to hop back on and see where you guys have taken this thing and the guests that you guys have gotten on there through different levels, different upbringings has been unbelievable to obviously the name Rising Coaches, man. Like coaches that are trying to get into the industry, coaches that are in the industry, like it's great giving back to that coaching industry is a big place, but at the same time, it's very small. So having you guys do this with the podcast and connect people like that has been unbelievable. And I appreciate you guys having me on here.
Yeah, great job, brother. We appreciate you.
No, no doubt. Big things for you here soon, brother. And to all of you coaches listening in, big or small, as Matt just mentioned, it's a big world, but a lot of us are tight-knit and close together. It's great to be able to get you all combined and listen to this because obviously there's some big things to be able to listen to from the player development side. But all of you, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You got your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, and you coaches, keep working, keep rising. We'll see you all soon. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.